Hello, everyone. Welcome back to episode 9 of The Bronx Beat. My name is Ryan Garcia, joined as always by Gary Phillips, beat writer for the New York Daily News. But we have a special guest, Brendan Cuddy, beat writer for The Athletic, also covering the New York Yankees. We had Chris Kirschner on. Now we have Brendan Cuddy on. So we have the Yankee beat pairing for The Athletic. We're excited to have him on. If you guys are listening to this on audio, whether that's Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen and get your podcast, please leave a 5-star rating and download. If you're watching this on YouTube, we'd really appreciate it if you like, subscribe, and turn on that notification bell, especially if you enjoy this kind of content. Again, we do the Bronx Beat twice a week, and if you're joining us for another episode, you've watched previous episodes, we appreciate your continued support. Without further ado, though, let's ask how everyone's doing here. Brendan, I heard you're a little bit sick. I heard you're a little banged up in Tampa. How are you feeling now?
I'm good, man. I'm good. No problems here. A little bit of a rough go adjusting to the weather down there, but you know, back in Jersey, back in my own place, everything's great. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right over here. Yeah, we had the same cold or allergies or whatever it was going around. You know, me, Brendan, Chris, we all actually shared an Airbnb for our first leg down there in Tampa. So that was a fun, great idea until one person got sick. And then, you know, then it starts spreading around, right? But also doing good, feeling better. Happy to be home in New York for a little bit. I'm actually going down to Florida again in a couple days for a bachelor party. And then I'll be back home for a couple days and back down to spring training again for, you know, basically the end of it, up until the Yankees head out to Arizona and then San Francisco. So we are almost ready to rock and ready for real games. It feels like it snuck up on us.
Yeah, so for those second legs, I'm assuming, like Gary, you said you're going down a little bit later. Brendan, when exactly are you going down for your second leg for spring training?
Heading back down Monday.
Monday, okay. So this is it's a little bit interesting this time of year now, because usually, you know, we're in the middle of spring training, but instead got the World Baseball Classic coming up. And I know, Brendan, you did an article on Aaron Judge and how he talked about what representing the United States meant to him, to his family, being the captain of Team USA for the World Baseball Classic. Can you talk a little bit about that piece and some of the elements that helped that piece come about?
Oh, yeah, it was just the curiosity, right? It's one thing to be the captain of the New York Yankees. No one's saying that's easy. It's another thing to be, named captain of Team USA. And just wondering what goes behind that, right? Because you're going to be with these guys for 3 weeks or so, but you're also Aaron Judge. You want to fit in, but you're also Aaron Judge. You know, there's so many great players on this team, but you're also Aaron Judge. So just like, what do you do? How do you handle that? And you know, Aaron was straightforward. It was like, listen, man, I'm going to go do my thing and just try to be myself and apply what I've learned as the Yankees captain to being captain of Team USA. Well, actually, what I thought was most interesting in terms of just straight up captaincy is how he wants to create a personal relationship with as many people as he can, whoever he comes across. The thought of trusting someone because you know who they are, know a little bit about them, and know what they've been through, as opposed to, you know, your high school principal telling you to stop talking in class. Well, buddy, I don't know you. You know, I don't want to listen to you. But if your teacher connects with you in some way, you know, you might be more apt to fall in line, or you're more apt to trust them. So I just liked hearing about Aaron's personal approach there. I think he takes that into other areas of his life as well, and it's something that I think we can all take into our lives.
I thought it was cool talking to him for a separate story that I did about just the guys he's most eager to learn from. You know, he mentioned Bryce Harper, who, you know, face of a franchise as well. He's done it in two different places. He's won MVPs, you know, talking about chasing championships and things like that, and just like wanting to relate to other players in his shoes, where he's going to be surrounded by a whole locker room full of all-stars, MVP, Cy Youngs, Gold Glovers. Like, to me, it's cool to kind of just picture them sitting around, picking each other's brains, seeing what they can learn from each other, what they might take and apply. But I thought what was really interesting about your story, which I guess I didn't know or didn't really think about too much, was Aaron's got a very deep appreciation for service members, some family ties to the military as well. Was that stuff that you knew beforehand, or that kind of just came up in talking to him? Like, how'd that come about?
I mean, I knew a little bit about just him really being, you know, his passion for those who have served. I've known about that for quite some time. It's been kind of a thing for a while. So, you know, I asked him about that. And look, man, everything is so politicized these days. Everything is so seen through the colors of politics. And I thought what Aaron was saying was really great, honestly. My grandfather's was a Marine. He was in the Korean War. You know, I've had other family and friends in the military. And, man, what they go through and what they do is tough. I especially liked when Aaron said veterans or active duty service members, when they come back here, they're not really taken care of. You know, they're told just jump back into society and be a normal person again. That's not easy. And to hear Aaron say something like that, to hear that on his mind was really interesting to me. Because again, you know, Aaron is the face of baseball, the face of the New York Yankees. He can be guarded at times and he should be guarded at times. But to hear him open up a little bit and say, you know, he's not really into how veterans are treated after their service was eye-opening to me. And frankly, I appreciated hearing it.
It would certainly be nice if we had more politicians that prioritized taking care of those guys and women when they do come back from serving. That would certainly be a step in the right direction. But yeah, I agree. That definitely stood out to me when I was reading your piece. One other thing that I've kind of thought with on the subject of the WBC, not necessarily your piece, but like, it seems like there's a lot more hype and anticipation and also talent coming from the United States than in years past. To use an anecdote from my own life, I was walking around my neighborhood, my apartment complex the other day, and I was shocked. I saw an Aaron Judge Team USA jersey hanging in the window next to a, you know, US men's Olympic hockey jersey. I was like, oh, wow, that's random, but also like kind of cool. Like, you don't really see, or at least you haven't seen in the past, American fans or even the players getting hyped for the World Baseball Classic. Do you feel like, I don't know, the U.S. has caught up to the rest of the world when it comes to this tournament? And if so, how much do you think that has to do with Judge being the captain?
I think it has everything to do with Judge playing. Speaking of my grandfather, this is actually him on this mug here. It was a gift from my mom, but she didn't want to use it because it was too nice. So, you know, I took it back because I'm going to use it. But I think it has everything to do with Judge. I think it all starts with him. I think if you're saying that your best player is going to go play in this thing, other guys fall in line. A lot of guys fall in line. A lot of guys want to go do it. Like Japan, you know, they get Ohtani on. I think a lot of guys are going to jump in. In 23, Judge was the best player, the best American player. And he still, you know, still is. But he wasn't playing, you know, so there was a lack of a little bit of a lack of excitement, because you want to see not just huge moments, but you want to see the best represented from every country, especially from Team USA. So I think that there is a greater interest this time around, honestly, because Judge is playing. If he wasn't playing, I think this would be different.
I think it definitely helps having, you know, Scooble, Skeens, right? But like the pitching, I think, was USA's biggest problem last time around in 2023. But yeah, I think Judge being there, it's just this magnet of attention. Like
there was the press. I'm mad at my story. I'm mad at my story about him being the captain of Team USA. I didn't make like a Captain America reference. He's friggin' Captain America. Like that's a big deal.
I also think in the regard to the tournament itself, like you want the best to play the best, right? Like there is a feeling of you want to have the best players on the planet, and you do have the two best players on the planet. No argument that they're number one and number two in whatever order you want to put them in, playing center stage. Everyone's going to be watching. Other countries have very, very talented players on their roster. Like, I think this only elevates baseball on the international stage and puts Judge as this face of a kind of growing USA program where they're trying to win these tournaments instead of just, whoever participates. We don't really care.
Yeah, just don't lose. Like, I mean, I don't know, man. Get to the championship game, get to the semifinals, whatever, but don't get bounced early, or else this is not going to accomplish what MLB needs it to accomplish in the U.S.
They've hyped this as a super team, right? So like it's gold medal or bust.
Yeah, and look, a lot of great players are playing. I don't blame Scooble for just doing one start. You know, he's got a contract coming up. He's got to keep himself healthy for his future. I get it. And one Scooble start is better than no Scooble starts. So I do think that you know, you're going to see the best from Team USA, or as close to the best as they're going to give you. And again, just don't let this be a disappointment, because that would be one hell of a way to start the 2026 Major League season.
I also think in regard to some of the other teams are going to be playing, again, I'm just really excited to see Aaron Judge versus Yoshinobu Yamamoto in what could be either a semifinal or a final matchup. I believe they can't play until before that, just based on how the pool is. Same with like DR and the USA. So I'm fascinated. The best of the best. Christopher Sanchez going for Team DR, so one of the top four or five best pitchers in the game as well. I do want to ask about how the tournament can affect coverage now that you're going to be back while the Classic is going on. Does it affect kind of what you're looking to write about, how you're going about in the clubhouse, things of that nature, while so many players in the Yankees are away playing this tournament?
I mean, sure. I can't interview the guys who aren't there. So that's one way that it affects it. But that also could make things a little bit more low-key, right? You know, when the bigger name guys are there, there's a certain energy in the clubhouse. Maybe when they're not, maybe things are a little bit more relaxed and, you know, there's less media in general there, and you're able to get a little bit of time with guys that you typically wouldn't, you know? So I think that you look at it as a positive, get what you can, do what you can, find out what you can, and we'll have 162 games to cover the guys who are out playing in the WBC.
Between the lack of Yankees players that are there and then the lack of reporters that are down there right now, it should be a pretty empty clubhouse. So you'll have your pick of the litter as far as the players that are there, coaches who are there, and stuff like that.
We say that, but it never works out that way.
No, it doesn't, right? Are you going to be watching WBC games? Are you going to be going straight from Steinbrenner Field to Miller's Ale House to catch a first pitch or not?
I think so. I'll probably throw it on the TV back at wherever I'm staying. Like, you know, you only get this once every 3 years. This is supposed to be the best team that Team USA has put out there. I think I'll definitely try to catch the Team USA games. I'm not quite sure that I'm going to be that jacked up for any other team, to tell you the truth. I mean, sure, the Dominican team's going to be awesome. Japan's going to be awesome. All these guys are going to be great, but like, we watch enough baseball throughout the year.
We do watch a lot of baseball. I will say it was pretty cool watching the championship game last time, Ohtani versus Trout, out in Public Bar. It was Miller's Ale House. I was there with Pete Caldera, Yankees writer for the Bergen Record. And, I mean, the place just erupted when over those final at-bats and final moments, final pitches. Like, it was pretty cool. I think it was a really, like, mixed international crowd. Like, again, like, I'm not sure there was a ton of American hype last time around, but like just being in that atmosphere in a public setting, watching that and hearing the whole bar lose their minds at the end, like that was really cool. So I'm looking forward to doing that again.
Yeah, man. Just people being excited, people being happy, people being into it. You know, it's like a little bit of a treat in some ways, because it's something you don't get or necessarily plan for. I mean, who had Trout, Ohtani, ninth inning last time? Who had that? No one had that.
The script writers. Yeah.
Yeah. If you told me that it was going to come down to Ohtani, Trout to end the tournament, like, yeah, you're okay. Like, this is a fantasy world. Like, you're making this up. And to speak to the element of just how significant this tournament can be, I mean, I think my favorite baseball moment is having like 20 or 25 of myself and my family huddled around a little iPad watching Team DR versus Team USA in 2017. I think Nelson Cruz hit this like huge home run in either the eighth or the seventh inning, two outs, puts DR ahead, and I've never cheered louder or been in a louder room in my life. Like, I've been to a lot of great baseball games. My family is very much into baseball and the Yankees and other sports, whatever it may be. that is the loudest anyone's ever been, I feel like, in my family. And that's just, it's just the nature of the tournament, and I'm really excited. Any final thoughts you guys have on WBC?
No, I think
that's, I mean, look, you're talking about moments for your family. That's what this is all about, right? When I was a kid watching the 94 NBA Finals and the Knicks winning winning over the Rockets, watching that with my dad, watching the Giants get smacked around by the Ravens in 2001. I forget exactly when that was, but I remember watching that with my dad. All these moments are about watching them with people you care about, and hopefully we all get a chance to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it really is about bringing people together, and I'm really excited for this event for that reason. Gary, you have any final thoughts?
No, just that it is a great way to grow the game internationally, home, abroad. Like, this is such a global game, and I personally love that there's a tournament like this. I love that baseball's coming back to the Olympics. Like, this is a global sport, and it's cool to see it be recognized and cherished in that way.
Yeah, and I think the growing sentiment around MLB players is, let's go play in this freaking thing. Like, let's go compete. Before, it kind of felt a little more cagey around, well, we don't want to get hurt. And I understand, don't get me wrong, like in the case of Skubal, free agent year, like I'm not shaming any players who are worried about that. More so, it's awesome that the culture shifted to, no, let's play in these things. Like, let's go have fun and play baseball that isn't just Major League Baseball, because these are big tournaments. There's something to win, and there's some pride on the line here. One of the players of prominence going for the Yankees to the World Baseball Classic is David Bednar. And David Bednar, entering a free agent year, traded from the Pirates to the Yankees at the deadline, became their closer, put up really strong numbers. Gary, I know you wrote an article about the goals he has for the 2026 season alongside some stuff about free agency. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about Bednar? What are his goals and how that article came together?
Yeah, so Bednar is returning to the World Baseball Classic. He pitched for Team USA last time around, so he is first on his to-do list, hoping to avenge what happened last time, right? He wants to get that gold medal. So he was kind of talking to me about wanting to win multiple championships this year, first being the WBC, then being a World Series with the Yankees. He didn't play for any winning teams in Pittsburgh, but he certainly seems to have handled the New York spotlight pretty well last year, seems comfortable in that closer's role in New York, which we know as recently as last year, right, with Devin Williams, not everybody is. And I was talking to him a little bit about free agency as well, if he's thought about it, if he's tried to put it out of his mind, if he's considered just like how big a leap he's taken in the last year, because people forget, like, he was demoted by the Pirates at the start of the season last year. Okay, now he's a good year away from cashing in and being one of the best, if not the best, relievers on the open market. He said he's trying to like stay present, be where his feet are. He was talking a little bit about look what happened to me last year. Like, how could I get ahead of myself, right? But where he is getting ahead of himself is these championships, gold medals, World Series rings. So I thought that was really interesting to hear him talk about. I haven't really thought about that angle. Like, oh, these guys could continue. There's going to be somebody somewhere on one of these teams, whether it's their country or their actual MLB team, that wins multiple titles this year. Like, that's pretty cool. And then just talking about, how he's fit in with the Yankees. Aaron Boone's talked a bunch about his steady demeanor, him being a rock. He had a quote about, it's nice when your core guys are not divas, which, you can interpret that however you may want to. Yeah, I've just noticed he's been a really like steady, calm presence who has fit in since the trade. Cuddy, you got the same takeaway there with Bednar? I know you're his lookalike on the beat, so.
Yeah, look, he seems comfortable. He seems comfortable in his own skin. And when you have the look like David Bednar and myself, like, how could you not be comfortable? You're dashing. Look, ninth inning, Yankee Stadium, stuff gets crazy. David Bednar hasn't had affect him yet. He's had his best season when he was pitching in the WBC, after that, 2023. So maybe this helps him really take off in the month of April. I think historically April's like not the best month for him. So maybe this puts him on a little bit of an on ramp to the season, gets him going early, and gives him his best year of his career going into free agency. All these guys, when they say they're not thinking about free agency, they're lying to you. But that's fine because we know that. But we got to ask, right? Because what if they say something interesting about what they're thinking about? Of course, David Bednar is thinking about free agency. And it only behooves him to do so. So, you know, if there's a place to set yourself up for a big free agency, it's Yankee Stadium. Or, I mean, you could be Devin Williams and, like, have a bad year and have good underlying metrics and still get paid $50 million for 3 years by the Mets. So, who knows? Nothing makes sense anymore.
Very rarely.
I shouldn't say that. That's look, Devin pitched well in a lot of spots. Just it wasn't what he thought it would be. So, yeah, I think David Bednar is in a good spot, just like you were talking about, Gary.
Very rarely does a player tell you he's looking for an 8 to 10 year contract and $35 million a year in free agency. But, hey, it's worth asking a guy every once in a while, right? Like, just to see where they're thinking, what their approach is. You know, some guys admit to thinking about it, but, like, are actively taking steps to try to not to, or practicing something in their mental approach. I think that was the case with Bellinger last year. But, you know, the Yankees have not spent a lot of money on relievers in recent years. They haven't spent on a big name free agent reliever since 2019. Me and you were talking about this a couple weeks ago, Cuddy, but like the Yankees have had, you know, long-term interest in Bednar, like prior to last summer's trade. They love his makeup. You think he's at least a fit to stick around long-term?
I mean, if he's the guy who he was last year, he's a fit in all 30 major league clubhouses. You know, good closer, you know, attacks the moment and lets bad outings go away. Like Boone talks about how Bednar kind of blew up in that first outing in Miami last year after the trade deadline, but still wanted to go out and pitch the next day or even the next inning. I think it was a 2-inning stint for him. So, you know, that stood out to Boone as someone who asks for the ball in tough spots and doesn't get shaken when things go wrong. So, look, I think David Bednar is, like I said before, in a good spot. And it could be, of course, it could be a long-term fit, right? Because you would want that anytime.
I also view him as, like, a bona fide, like, at least from last year. I thought he pitched like an elite reliever. Last year, he finished inside the top 10 in strikeout-to-walk rate among qualified relievers. His ERA was strong. The Yankees have notably had some velocity issues in their bullpen last season. Among four-seam fastballs, they had the second slowest four-seam fastball velocity among bullpens last year. So I think from, like, stylistically what he is, a hard-throwing power closer, the Yankees, there aren't a lot of guys who do that in the bullpen, and the guys who do don't have great command or really like long track records of doing it either. So I think if the Yankees are going to pay a reliever and break that trend, hard to find a better candidate than Bednar. If not Bednar, then who is kind of my question. And I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Dude, we haven't even started this season. I don't care who the Yankees closer is in 2027, which also may start in May or something because of a lockout. Like they got. Maybe it's Carlos or Legrange.
I'm curious to see what happens this year if, you know, somebody gets hurt, somebody's struggling. I mean, the Yankees have their top three relievers in Bednar, Camilo Duvall, and Fernando Cruz all pitching in the World Baseball Classic. Like, if one of them goes down at any point, especially here at the start of the season, like, that bullpen, as we've talked about a lot on this podcast, has some question marks and a lot of uncertainty in it. Like, who's jumping into one of those late inning roles? Brendan, we've talked a lot about the bullpen competition on this podcast in the last few weeks. So, like, I think listeners know what me and Ryan think of the different competitors and candidates that are out there. Like, who's stood out to you among the, I guess, the flyers that they have or the lottery tickets that we've called them? Anybody kind of at the top of the race, in your opinion?
Boone brings up Hedrick any chance he can.
Every time.
And I mean, Cade Winquist is the Rule 5 pick. I don't think they're just going to give up on him immediately. I don't think they're married to him. You know, I think that if things don't look great in April, like, see ya. That's very, very possible. But I do think that Hedrick is definitely in the top of that mix. I think Jake Bird is in the top of that mix as someone who they traded for last year, who I think they had more of an eye toward this season with him than they did really last year. So I would say those are the guys who are sticking out to me. But I mean, geez, like Yerry De Los Santos was good last year. Like, you know, like his sinker is like pretty tough, man. So I think they've got some good theoretical depth, right? Guys who haven't been in the fire. And at some point you're going to see all of them because that's how things work in baseball. And with the Yankees, these guys get hurt eventually. So, you know, they're all going to get their shots. It's about what that's going to look like on opening day. And it's like, what are they going to do also with the off days? Could they demote one of their starters and keep an extra reliever for the first 10 days if they don't feel like they need a fifth starter? Like if Luis Gil is still throwing, topping out at 96, 97, would they go four starters rather than keep a fifth guy to start the year? I don't know. So it could be anybody, but we've all kind of locked in on that group of who it looks like in the back of the bullpen.
And is there a feeling with this bullpen and kind of where it's at right now that, like, do you think there is a real chance? I know Brian Cashman's talked about this, but I want to get your personal opinion. With guys like LeGrand and Elmer, the way they've looked in spring training, that in the second half of the year or later on in the season, that they could factor into the bullpen mix in any capacity?
Hell yeah. I'd be shocked if you don't see LeGrand in the bullpen at some point this year. Like, really stunned. Because the Yankees have a lot of starting depth. They're getting starting pitchers back. Cole, Rodon, Schmidt. You're not going to just let 103 miles an hour sit there, you know, all season.
Yeah, I'm with Cuddy on that one. I think long-term, they probably try to keep him a starter as long as they possibly can. But in the meantime, yeah, if there's an opening in that bullpen, if somebody is not, you know, living up to expectations or getting the job done, yeah, let's see what 103 can do in a short burst. I'm guessing it would probably play up pretty nicely.
Yeah, or if it's June and it's just like you got seven starters already. You still got Blackburn and Yarbrough in the bullpen. Like, you know, and then people are healthy. Just get them up there and let it rip. Let them get July, August, and September in the big league. So when September comes around, you know, maybe you're looking at Dellin Betances part two.
There's also a fair point to make that, you know, you're using your bullets anyways, might as well use them in the big leagues, right? Like injury risk is not just a velocity thing. It's if you're a pitcher, your arm could go at any moment. Why not use those bullets in the big leagues as soon as humanly possible and extract that value then is I guess part of it too.
Yeah. But you want to make sure the guy is big league ready. Yeah, and I don't think the Yankees are sure he's big league ready right now. I think that he's impressive. I think that he's throwing 103 miles an hour in February, and good luck with that, no matter who you are. But I do get the impression they feel like he's got to finish off at AAA in some way.
Yeah, people got to keep that in mind. Like, he still hasn't pitched at the AAA level. Elmer Rodriguez, even, like, he's only got, what, one regular season start and one postseason start at AAA? So in their perfect world, those two guys are still getting some more minor league seasoning and, you know, showing that they can handle AAA before they just throw them in the big leagues, whatever the role may be.
Yeah, and also the big league guys they'd be replacing, like, pretty good, right? Like, Blackburn's look good this spring. You know, Yarbrough has a track record. You know, Cruz, De Los Santos, Cruz, Hill, Duvall, Bednar, like, these are names. These are dudes. So before you go replacing dudes, you gotta make sure that your guy's ready to go.
Yeah, and you also have to factor these guys are guaranteed big leaguers. How much rope do you give them before you consider cutting that contract? Like, it's not, I understand $2 million to the New York Yankees isn't, you know, an insanely massive contract, but you don't want to sign a guy to give him like 2 weeks in the roster to prove himself. Pitching is pretty volatile. It can kind of, you can figure some things out during the year. There are plenty of pitchers who look great to start the year and they burn out. There are some guys who look terrible to start a year. I think of like Wandy Peralta when they first got him. He was awful, gets hurt, comes back in 21, looks good, and is an anchor of the bullpen for years to come. So I do think that's part of it as well. Are there any final thoughts you guys have on the final bullpen spot and any of the guys who could be in that competition?
No, I got nothing. I miss Wandy Peralta, man.
I think he rocked. He rocked, man. Very fun personality,
too. He was fun.
And I do think there's a conversation to be had in terms of roster questions about the bench spot as well, the final bench spot. I understand they signed Randall Grichuk, but Boone has talked about maybe Ryan McMahon playing shortstop potentially affecting the composition of their bench. They've talked about not wanting to use Ben Rice as the primary backup catcher, and their actions so far have suggested by not having Rice catch that there is validity to that. Where are you guys at with this bench? Like, what do you think this bench is going to end up looking like as they go into spring training? Gary, we'll start with you.
The way I look at it is two spots are locked in right now, barring injury. That's Paul Goldschmidt, who can only play first base, and Amed Rosario, who could theoretically play a bunch of positions, isn't the best defender, will probably get some platoon reps at third base. Those two guys are right-handed hitters. Okay, now you've got Randall Grichuk. The Yankees have wanted a right-handed hitting outfielder for a while. Let's assume he gets every chance possible to make the team, right? He's on a non-guaranteed NRI deal, but let's assume he gets that shot. Okay, now you're choosing theoretically between a traditional backup catcher, that would be JC Ascara, depending on how you want to handle Ben Rice, or a capable backup shortstop, which would be Max Schumann or Oswaldo Cabrera if he's ready, which it doesn't look like he's going to be. Paul DeJong is in camp as well. There's a couple other NRIs who could play short. Well, if McMahon shows this week that like he's capable of at least playing shortstop in a pinch, okay, now maybe you got the best of both worlds, right? You got that backup shortstop for Jose Caballero while Anthony Volpe is out injured, and you're carrying Ascara in that traditional backup catcher role. So I think maybe we'll have a better sense after this week. I'm not expecting Ryan McMahon to go out there and play shortstop in a couple games like he's supposed to and just look completely lost, right? He's an elite defender at third. He's been a utility guy earlier in his career. So I think it's theoretically a fine idea to try out. And hey, if it works, okay, now you're not making that choice. Cuddy, how do you see it?
I think you're playing with fire if you're making your starting first baseman the backup catcher. I don't know. Like, agreed. Yeah, sure. Could he do it? Sure. Rice has been catching bullpens, a lot of bullpens. He caught Schiller the other day. He caught Cole. Like he's getting in there. He's getting work. So it's not like they're keeping him on the shelf. I don't know, man. Have a backup catcher. Just like don't beat up Ben Rice while he's still trying to figure out how to play first base. I get that you can have Ascara up in the majors basically the next day, depending on if there's an injury and the, you know, in a pinch, you could do that, sure. I don't love McMahon working that short. He's a really, really, really good third baseman. I don't know. I don't know, man. I think you're asking these guys to get hurt. And I would go Goldschmidt, right now, what's his name? Grichuk, Ascara, who am I missing?
And Rosario.
Rosario. And then there's one more guy, right? No, four-man bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your world, Rosario is the emergency shortstop, and you just live with it if you have to, which also totally, totally reasonable.
Jesus.
It's not great, but, you know, we're talking about a one-day limited scenario here. Like, this is worst case.
Yeah, but emergency. Like, see, I don't like that either, because I don't like forgetting or not knowing the cutoffs from shortstop versus playing third base, getting twisted around. It's not just fielding the ball in front of you. It's knowing where to be on a first to third. It's knowing where to be on a relay. Like that can cost you a game too. Yeah, McMahon's smart enough to handle it. I just don't like it. So I don't know. I don't have a good answer. I'm going to punt on it, and I'm going to complain about whatever it is.
They did limit their flexibility on the bench a little bit by bringing Goldschmidt back. Like, I know he serves other purposes and other roles, and he's that right-handed bat. He's also a great mentor for Rice. He can be a defensive replacement for Rice, but, you know, you've got him pigeonholed at one position. You've got Rosario really isn't a good defender at any position that he plays. Ascara theoretically has played other spots before, but he's a catcher, and that's that. They're kind of looking at a choice between one or the other, legitimate, capable backup shortstop versus traditional backup catcher. For either, I think, to really be an issue, something's going to have to go terribly wrong, in which case you just fix it with a call-up the next day, I guess, right?
Look, they did it through basically all of August and September last year.
Right.
Where Rice was the backup catcher and Wells was the starter. Like, you could do it. Do I love it? No. Am I an idiot? Probably.
I wouldn't say that.
Thank you.
It's only going to get more fun when Volpe comes back and there's more bench questions about who goes down for him if everyone's healthy, which is a big if, just because, you know, Stanton's pretty injury prone. Things just happen. I'm curious to see how this bench shakes out. I don't think I have a good answer for it either, because there's logistical holes to poke in really any alignment of it, because your two MLB guaranteed guys are a first baseman and a guy who you don't really trust defensively anywhere, and you're sticking at third primarily. So any final bench thoughts?
Nah, I think we covered it. Look, I guess you could talk me into McMahon being the back. You could talk me into McMahon being the backup shortstop more than you can talk me into Rice being the backup catcher while playing first base every day.
I also think there's the aspect of off days. You have to give a catcher off days. You have to take them out of the lineup to let their body recover. We saw that last year with Rice. The Yankees would take him out of the lineup against the righty after he catches, because that's what they do.
Yeah, but they'll also make it so that Rice sits against a lefty and Goldschmidt plays first. Or they'll make it so that Wells sits against a lefty, Goldschmidt plays first, and Rice is behind the plate. And there's a lot of off days to start the season for the Yankees. Like, there's a dumb That's amount of off point. Days.
Yeah.
It's probably a good thing for the team that, you know, one of the major talking points right now is last couple guys in the bullpen, and also, like, who is the last person on the bench? There's question marks, maybe even some concerns in those two areas, but, like, speaks to the rest of the roster looking pretty solid right about now.
Look, I mean, this time last year, the conversation was Oswald Peraza and Pablo Reyes for the final bench spot, and then both players made it because LeMahieu got hurt. So not the most inspiring group of backup infielders, to not to disparage anybody, but, like, you know, it's not like their quality of play is particularly excellent.
Where is Pablo Reyes right now?
That is a great question.
Last I saw, no, I think Mexico, but don't quote me on that.
I haven't thought about him in forever.
First baseman for the Angels. I don't know if you guys know, but first baseman for the Angels.
He's playing first now. Okay.
Yes. I don't know if you've seen that. There's like a clip of him getting a throw to first base, and it just like completely whiffs the glove, and it's like it's pretty interesting. I think he also gave up a home run to Higashioka in a random game last year. Random notes. I don't know why I know these things, but I do want to ask you guys about a couple quick hitters before we wrap up here. The first, I want to ask about your biggest takeaway from spring training. Whether it's a storyline, a player, whatever you find is like, all right, this is the thing that stood out to me the most. Brendan, we'll start with you. What do you got?
I think Pablo Reyes is in camp with the Padres.
There you go.
That's incredible.
Him and Alex Verdugo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True. Verdugo. Good point. Biggest takeaway at camp. Cole looks like ready to go. He's not throwing sliders yet, not throwing breaking balls yet, all fastballs. But Jesus, you know, pumping 97. I get it's one inning of work, but like, he doesn't look like someone who's hurt. He doesn't look like someone who lazed his way through his rehab. And really, the notion of whether the Yankees are running it back is it hinges on Cole being good, Cole being healthy. If Cole is good and healthy, they're not running it back. If he's not, they're running it back. So I think that my biggest takeaway is to see the intensity with which Gerrit Cole gets back on the mound, to see that really is really something, you know, because, you know, having covered the team for quite some time, you look back on some performance and say, damn, like, that was awesome. Like, watching CeCe pitch until his arm fell off, literally until his arm fell off, was crazy. Watching Dellin Betances blow guys away in the 7th, 8th, 9th innings for 4 years in a row. Nuts. Young Luis Severino. Crazy. To go a full season without watching Gerrit Cole and then to see it come back again is a pretty cool thing from a, I mean, even from a professionalism standpoint. Like, this guy is out here and he's out here to show you that, no, this is what he does. He's Gerrit Cole. So that's my big takeaway. Watching him be crazy.
Yeah, I think the last time this question came up, I talked a lot about LeGrande and just him really standing out and impressing me, not only with the stuff, but the intangibles as well. But I'm going to second what Cuddy said. I mean, everything I've seen from Gerrit thus far has been like, oh, okay, like, you look like you're ready to throw in a Major League Baseball game. Obviously, he is not. Obviously, like Cuddy said, like, he hasn't dipped into his entire arsenal, but he looks smooth. He looks crisp. The fastball is popping. He's not only facing hitters, but, like, blowing it by them and, you know, pressing the hell out of Aaron Judge and Trent Grisham and Giancarlo Stanton and these guys. You know, he's facing the big boys in camp. It's not like they're, you know, hey, let's call a couple of minor league guys over from complex across the street and just get Gerrit a little warm up here. Like, he's working. Like, he's out there throwing and throwing hard. It's been cool to see, kind of, you know, just attesting to what Cuddy said, like, cool to see him coming, you know, he's still coming back, he's still in the process, but very cool to see, like, where he's at right now.
Yeah, it's just watching him go about it, right? Like, yeah, he's throwing 97, that's great, but it's the intensity, it's the fluidity, it's what the vibe is when he's on the mound. You know, it's like so go get your popcorn, because you're watching this guy as he comes back, as he's turning back into himself. Yeah. Also kind of cool to see Aaron Judge, like, on firing on all cylinders this early in camp. Usually he's someone who takes some time to ease into camp. And I do wonder a little bit about how this is going to affect him and a few others, just in terms of a body standpoint, in terms of a getting a break every now and then, because it's a lot to start your season like 2 or 3 weeks earlier than you expected. So I do wonder a little bit about those guys. Oh, and Giancarlo Stanton, like, he's healthy. You know, he's healthy. He's hitting bombs. He's as healthy as he can be for now. And you know, to see Giancarlo's name etched into an opening day lineup will be a big deal for the Yankees. Just knowing he's there and having that extra bat.
I think all those points are awesome. Like, it's awesome hearing, you know, from you guys and your perspective being there in person. I will say, on the Cole note, as the person with the weakest beard on this panel here, I love his beard and I want it to stay. Want the beard to stay. I'm envious. I can't really grow a good beard, but you know, I think Cole's beard's cool. And on the note of Stanton, like, as a right-handed bat too, really important. I think if you look at the Yankee lineup, just the right-handed hitters, and you remove Stanton's name from it, I know Goldschmidt hits lefties well. I know Rosario hits lefties well, and those guys would get more playing time in that scenario. But that's a big loss. Like, that is a massive loss for their balance in their offense. Any final notes you guys have on that?
I think Gerrit should bring back the long Astros and Pirates hair, but I'm not sure what the Yankee grooming policy is on the long hair at this point.
I don't know. I know it exists. I know they still tap guys a little bit on the shoulder and be like, "Yo, you got to chill." But you know, if you're Gerrit Cole, you get a little bit more breath than everybody else does.
Fried's looked like he was pushing it a little bit at the start of camp.
Yeah.
Did not know Freed could grow long hair. That's maybe I just didn't pay attention enough to the hair in Atlanta, but I did not know that. Now, I do want to ask one non-baseball related question that is spring training related, but Gotta ask you both. We'll start with Brendan here. Biggest, like, favorite part of spring training, the most recent trip, last time down there, favorite part, highlight from that trip?
Oof. It's going to be cliche, but it's what I say every time. It's the first time I sit and just stare at a palm tree. Because no matter how long the days are and no matter how stressful the days can be, you sit and you see a palm tree and you say, man, it could be worse. Like, how lucky am I? So it's that. My mom loves the beach. She loves warm weather and all this kind of stuff. Yet she's born and raised in Jersey. So she gets all excited when I send her a picture of water, or send her a picture of a palm tree, or send her a picture of just something that beautiful that I see. So it's that kind of stuff. That's the best part to me, just centering myself a little bit when things are going a little crazy.
I like that answer. That's a nice sentimental answer. I like it. We talked a little bit last time on the podcast about the Boone and the coach's dinner that the writers have each year. That's always a highlight, especially on the first trip down. I would say non-baseball, just in general, like eating. Tampa's a really great food city. Me, Cuddy, and Chris found a whole bunch of new places on our last trip that are now going to become staples and places that we go back to. One place called Ulele, which Cuddy did not take part in that dinner, but Native American cuisine down there in Tampa. Unbelievable food. So for me, that's always a fun part, like getting to eat on somebody else's dime, and makes you a little more adventurous and open to trying new things. So I try to take full advantage of that, and definitely did so on this last trip.
I will say, in regard to Brendan's comments about the weather, while we were recording and Gary was in Tampa, I definitely felt a little bit envious because we were getting killed by snow up here. Like, I would be like, hey, going back out to shovel, coming back inside, still a little sweaty, about to go record. And Gary's dealing with beautiful, sunny, amazing Tampa weather in March. I think that's the best weather in the world. Tampa in March specifically is the perfect kind of weather. Definitely a little bit envious on my end for a couple of weeks. But, I think I'm going to be – hopefully it gets warmer again.
Yeah, not to rain on your parade, but we were also dying for a good last week of it. Probably. For whatever reason, we're down in this beautiful weather and we've both got the plague. So it was hard to really be into. I had to stay home from camp one day. I stayed at the Airbnb and just worked from the couch, because if I had shown up in clubhouse and just like coughed on everybody, I would have been looking at me like, what are you doing here? Not poor me or anything, but like, yeah. We were now surfing every day.
It's a good point. Yeah, there were definitely a couple nights where I think we wanted to go out, or we wanted to go play basketball or something, and it's like, okay, maybe we should rest. Maybe we should take it easy. Maybe we should stop at a CVS and literally nowhere else today. But you're going to be back down there soon enough. It'll probably be even a little bit warmer, so you'll get to enjoy the time outside. Looking forward, as always, to seeing what you come up with, what you report on, what you write about while you're down there. And I guess I won't be seeing you until San Francisco, right?
I guess so. I don't know when you're down there.
I'm back down the 16th.
Gotcha. Yeah, so we'll just miss each other.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you doing the pod. First time, hopefully not the last time. Cuddy, anything else you want to add? Anything?
No.
You want to preview or promote or tell everybody where to find you?
I got nothing, guys. Thank you for having me on, and best of luck with this as you go forward.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. And we'll include links to the article we discussed about Aaron Judge on The Athletic, of course, and The Athletic profile itself, where it has the link to all your articles. Brendan, thank you again for coming on. And for everyone listening, thank you for sticking through to the end. Again, if you're listening on audio, leave a 5-star rating and download. If you're watching on YouTube, like, subscribe, turn on that notification bell. We really appreciate your continued support, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Peace out, everybody.